Greetings, troubled listeners. Welcome back to the Troubled Men Podcast. I am Renee Coman, sitting once again in Snake and Jake's Christmas Club Lounge in the heart of the Klempire with my co-host, the original troubled man for troubled times, Mr. Manny Chevrolet. Welcome, Manny.
Hey, thank you very much. How you doing?
I'm good. We're here a little bit early. We got here. Snake and Jake's, they still had the doors chained up.
That was to keep people in.
Well, sure, they do that from time to time.
We're starting a little early tonight, but it's already a raucous kind of crowd already.
It is. I know.
I think it's the festival season.
Right.
You know?
Yes.
You just had the FQ Fest.
French Quarter Fest.
Yes,
yeah.
Tomorrow starts the Jazz Fest.
Right.
Which I've already, like, my wife and I are strategically got the sawhorses and the caution tape and the cones.
Skull and crossbones.
I don't use the trash cans because people move. Dog walkers.
Oh, yeah.
Dog walkers. And people will tend to move them saying, what's a trash can doing here?
Right.
But that's why I use the sawhorses with the caution tape. And then
you have orange cones too?
I have orange cones.
Professional.
Yeah. And, my neighbor, Pat Goody from Goody Construction, the president and founder of Goody Construction.
Shout out to him.
He gave me some cones a few years back.
Oh, nice.
And after Katrina, he also gave me one of those big long sticks that picks up metal things. A big, yeah.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know, for nails and stuff.
Oh,
like
yeah,
that.
With a magnet on
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
he
handy.
Gave me one. I have one of those. Anytime there's a storm, I go around the house or in front of the house.
Pick up any roofing nails that might have blown
roofing
loose.
Nails, you know, just nails. And it's good for the people's tires on the street, you know. So I have that.
Okay.
And it's always good to have. And so the Jazz Fest is starting tomorrow. The first weekend. Are you playing the first weekend?
I'm playing tomorrow with Lynn Drury and playing the next day or playing on Saturday with I don't know.
You can't remember. You're playing Saturday.
Tomorrow.
No, right?
I'm playing tomorrow with Lynn Drury the next day with Loose Cattle.
Oh, okay.
At the festival.
Well,
yes.
You know, things start happening crazy. The heat's coming up. You know, people are getting crazy. In fact, last
Caterpillars.
Night, Caterpillars are happening. Yeah, they're deadly, apparently, aren't they? They're very, very deadly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I see them, and I just walk around them. I don't want to... Who eats them? Do the birds eat them? Or,
I don't know. They're poisonous. I had one fall on my head the other day.
Really?
Yeah.
I heard they can sting you.
Oh, yeah.
They have this vicious...
Did it
like,
sting you?
It did.
Oh, really?
On the scalp.
I don't know. I screamed and ran. Threw it off.
Did you write a Yelp review about it?
I didn't.
No. You're not going to get any money from that.
No.
Do they die after they sting you? Are they one of those kind of bugs
or
insects?
I don't think so.
Yeah. But anyway, speaking of crazy things, last night I was closing up the house and stuff, closing the shutters and doing some stuff. And I always see dog walkers and, you know, in my neighborhood and stuff. And I saw this guy across the street. I've never seen him before. He's walking just a regular-looking dog, you know, four legs, brown, maybe 60-pound dog or something like that. But he's brushing his teeth while walking the dog. I was like, what the fuck is this guy doing?
Huh.
He had like an electric toothbrush, and I could hear it.
Multitasking.
Wow, yeah. Crazy.
I don't know if he was getting ready to kiss the dog or something. I have no idea. But it was very strange. Now, I had never seen that before.
No.
Now, I've seen people, like I have a neighbor a couple blocks away who walks his dog and holds a cocktail in his hand.
Okay,
walks
well, that makes
dog.
Sense.
You know, he does that, which is fine. Usually, sometimes I will bring in the trash cans or take out the trash in my robe. You know, I do that once in a while.
Uh-huh. But no toothbrush.
It's getting more frequent doing that. Just walking out with my robe.
You care know. Less and less.
Yeah, I care less and less. The older I get. But I've never seen
slipping.
Anyone brushing their teeth while walking their dog.
No.
I mean, you know, so... I don't know. It's crazy going nuts out there.
Maybe next time you'll see him, we'll have like an electric razor. And
I don't know. Or maybe the dog will be walking him. I have no idea. But the other big news going on, the sewage and water board is fucked again. a big, huge break out there in the canal, whatever.
Where it's dumping raw sewage into the industrial canal. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And the first thing they said was, don't fish there.
Oh, yeah.
Don't fish or swim there. That's the first press release I saw.
Who knew that people were swimming or fishing there in the first place?
I don't. Somebody. You know.
Well, I did see a guy talking about it, one of the divers or something, and he's saying, there's zero, you can't see an inch in front of your face. It said it's all by feel. That's the
it's
whole
like looking
job.
Looking for Loch Ness.
Yeah. He said you have to go feel it around and then make a mental picture in your mind and go up and draw it.
Well, the thing I'm thinking is, these pipes are underwater. How the fuck are you going to fix it if it's underwater?
I don't know.
I mean, you can't drain it. You can't drain the canal.
No. I mean, you must have to put some kind of containment device on it. I don't know how that, a big giant clamp on it of some sort.
If you can't see where the hole is.
I mean, you got to feel for where the hole is.
Can't they use that, you know, the space imagery? Can't they do that kind of stuff? You know, where they see fires, you know, from space?
I don't know if it can penetrate. I mean, it's not a fire, you know. It's just water, dirty water mixing with less dirty water.
Oh,
slightly less dirty water.
Yeah.
And a big giant black pipe and black water. I don't know. It's
they're fucked out there.
But yeah, it's you know, somebody ran into it. But just the fact that the thing is in a position where a vessel could run into it is the seems
yeah. Why
like
is a vessel? Was it a huge like tanker? Or?
I don't know what it was, but
it's a canal, right?
Yeah, I mean, you'd think that the pipe would be in a position where it couldn't be hit by anything. But there you go.
I don't know, man. I blame our mayor for it. I blame her for everything
I know.
You know.
Scapegoat.
Other big news going on is our fearless leader who starts a war and then he can't finish it. And it's, what I'm thinking is, like, he started this war and the people he started it with are like, what the fuck, you know? We didn't ask to get bombed, you know? You just fucking... And now you want us to stop defending ourselves, you know? It's just like, I don't know. Anyway, I can go on and on about it, but he says some of the stupidest stuff I've ever heard in my life, and then his cabinet is falling apart. But another big news, I don't know if you heard, but they're auctioning off memorabilia from the Titanic.
I did see that.
Did you see that?
I saw that.
And I saw that a life preserver jacket went for like $200,000.
Huh.
And then I heard also this watch from a very famous rich man was auctioned off just today for like $1.6 million or something like that.
You have some items that you have your eye on?
I just have some hatred towards the filmmakers. Anyway, but then I was thinking to myself, well, this guy died with his watch on. So who found the body and took the watch?
Huh.
You know,
maybe he left it in the stateroom or something.
I don't know.
He was in a hurry. You know, you gotta imagine he was, not worried about the jewelry so much.
Yeah, like that old lady with the jewel.
Right. Yeah. You see that happened to her. That they and they found
best
it.
Best Seinfeld line ever was when George says, "I just saw that movie, The Titanic," and Jerry says, "Well, what'd you think?" And George says to Jerry, "That lady, she's just a liar, right?" It's one of the best lines ever in TV history. "That old lady, she's just a liar." And Jerry goes, "Yeah, and somewhat of a tramp, I think." Anyway, yeah, they're having that going on. I tried to bid. I bid for like some menu item.
Okay.
You know, in the club, and I bid like $8, but
yeah,
they wanted euros.
Oh, well.
So it's like, whatever.
It's
what
tough.
Are you
yeah,
do?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's
any other news going on?
I could go into stuff, but, you know, maybe we should get to our guest.
Yes.
I know she has,
she's got a great laugh, too.
She's a very spirited young lady. We're I'm anxious to get into it with her. So shall we do that, Manny?
Yeah.
And this is a guest that really is pennies from heaven, came out of nowhere. And, you know, we were not going to have a show. We didn't have a guest. And then out of nowhere, this just fell into our laps. It couldn't have been more well-timed.
I was really drunk when I got that email. I was so drunk, I fell upstairs. That's how drunk
I
was. Can you imagine that? Anyway,
sure.
Go on. I'm sorry.
That's all right. Well, she's a terrific stand-up comedian, producer, writer, model, actress, podcast host, with credits including The Last Comic Standing, Netflix is a Joke, and Peacock Channel Half Hour Special, Hanoi Honey. She's recently launched the Rosie Tran Presents is a 10-episode comedy series available on Amazon Prime.
Oh, wow.
Highlighting female and diverse comedians in stand-up and interview segments. She's toured all around the world, but she'll be appearing right here in New Orleans at the Zeitgeist Theater Sunday, May 3rd on the Embarrassed by Night show. And also, it's a documentary screening for The Empathizer, which is a film that she co-produced. We're going to get into all that and much more, but without further ado, the great Ms. Rosie Tran. Welcome, Rosie.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thanks for coming on.
So you're from here, right?
Yes, I'm from the West Bank of New Orleans.
Born and raised in New Orleans.
Born and raised.
Now, I did see one of your little bits when before I passed out.
okay.
That you're Vietnamese Chinese, right? Or Chinese, what are you?
I'm Vietnamese.
Vietnamese.
Yeah.
Now, did your family, were they Vietnamese who like came to America after the whole conflict there? Were they boat people? Or
yes.
They were already here? They were boat people.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Because I grew up in Los Angeles, and I remember after the war, boat people came to California. They would, the government put them in select places, you know. But for some reason, they took a bunch of boat people from Vietnam, and they put them in Santa Barbara, California, which I thought was like, well, these people aren't going to like that at all.
Actually, yeah. New Orleans is the perfect place because it's very similar to Vietnam. It's super humid.
Right.
There's a seafood culture, and there's just a lot of similarities. There's a French influence here. There's a French influence in Vietnam. So
right.
New Orleans is probably the closest place to home
yep.
that Vietnamese people could find, I think, in America.
Right.
Well,
maybe Florida.
Yeah,
I mean,
there was
New Orleans more.
It was
I could see sending
Florida,
boat people like towards the Bay Area where there's lots of other Asian communities and there's Korean communities in LA and stuff. But to send a bunch of Vietnamese boat people to Santa Barbara just made no sense whatsoever. And Santa Barbara is just like rich people who don't want this kind of thing happening to them. And I remember
other people that are not them.
Yeah, who are not them, exactly. You know, who are not, you know, usually those people are their servants and stuff like that. You know, that kind of stuff. But then I remember about 2 years after they settled, and they were opening little shops and restaurants and stuff. And I'll never forget this. This was like, I guess, 1980, 81. There was this big news story on the local LA news where Santa Barbara residents... Now, don't take this badly, but Santa Barbara residents...
Yeah, you know,
when someone says, don't take this badly...
Right. Yeah, get ready. Yeah.
Santa Barbara residents...
Uh-oh.
Santa Barbara residents were complaining that their dogs were missing.
Oh.
And it was just like... So, of course, the Vietnamese got blamed. You know, but nothing was happening. They were just losing their dogs. Nothing was going on.
That's probably the coyotes, right? They have a lot of coyotes.
Yeah, there's a mountainous community, coyotes, lots of, you know, David Crosby lived there for years. He was probably on acid, fucking around with dogs and stuff. Who knows?
You know, we always ask, where'd you go to high school? Now, I actually did see a little interview with you before here. So I know which high school you went to, but not only that, you and I went to the same junior high school, Edna Carr.
Did you go to Carr?
And went to the same high school, Ben Franklin.
Okay. Are you a West Baker?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
And I was trying to think when you...
Where did you go to elementary school, though?
Alice Hart.
Me too!
Oh, my.
The Alice Hart, Edna Carr, Ben Franklin pipeline.
That's right. Exactly. My sister, Rebecca Coleman, went through the same pipeline. She's a little bit ahead. She's a little bit older than you. I was trying to think if y'all were in this, would have been at Franklin at the same time. I think she's about 6 years older than you, so no. But you must be the child of Vietnamese who came here after the war.
Yeah,
huh?
I'm first generation. My parents are immigrants.
Right. So I remember when I was a student at Carr, so I was at Rosenwald when Saigon fell. So by the time I was at Carr, that was the first year where we had an influx of Vietnamese students. And I remember these kids coming into class and thinking, man, that's tough. These people barely speak English, man. It's a horrible position to have to be in. They just came from a war-torn country, and now they're here. Now, the very next year, many of these students were at the top of every class. And I thought, Wow, man, that's some fucking people there, man.
That's you're like, what am I doing wrong?
No, I was like, no, that's a different kind of people there that you know, can turn it around that quickly. I was extremely impressed. So you were second generation of that community that was there. What part of the West Bank did y'all live in?
In Algiers.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, like Old Aurora, kind of? Or?
Yeah, Old Aurora. I grew up like a block away from Alice Hart.
Oh, all right. Right on. Yeah, well, that's, man, crazy. Small
world.
Do you
have siblings?
Huh?
I do. I have a younger sister, an older sister, and a half-brother.
A half-brother? Yeah. And your parents are still alive or no?
No, my dad passed away 4 years ago.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
Thank you.
And what's, you know, going to these public schools or whatever they're called here, I don't know, when did you just sit in front of the TV and watch The Tonight Show and stuff like that? You know, we're going to get to the comedy early.
Yeah. I didn't even know what stand-up comedy was.
You didn't?
Yeah. Hmm. I was not watching The Tonight Show.
You're not watching any of that?
No.
You know, was Johnny still around, or was you just watching Jay Leno?
I think
David?
Jay Leno was on when I was younger.
Because I think we're much older than you.
Yeah, she could be our child.
Yeah, I think so.
No, easily.
I don't think so.
Oh, absolutely. No, absolutely. I know.
Maybe
what
you are.
Born.
You know, I don't know.
No, I know what you, I mean. Yeah, age-wise.
Okay.
That's what I mean.
Right. So you're in school, you're doing well, grammar school, you're doing well, you're making friends, American friends, Hispanic friends, all sorts of people.
Oh, yeah.
Is it
a
melting pot?
She's from here.
Yeah, I know that. I know that. You know, but I mean, I'm from here too, but I was, you know, picked on for being a Latino and stuff like that. And, you know, it happens, you know.
Actually, I think the dynamic of New Orleans has changed a lot even since post-Katrina. Like, there wasn't really a strong Latino community here until post-Katrina.
No, Manny was out in L.A.
I know Manny was in L.A. Okay. Yeah. I'm staying out here.
Well, because someone had to rebuild the city.
Yeah.
Well,
so you had the Hispanics come.
We always had Central Americans here.
We always had a lot of Central and South Americans here.
And sure. Cubans. We didn't have a lot of Mexicans. That's what we were missing.
Yeah, that was a post-Katrina thing.
Hard to get good Mexican food here. Well, so you're saying what were your interests when you were in high school and stuff? You weren't into comedy, or were you in theater, performance of any type?
Music or anything?
No.
Nothing.
Okay.
I grew up in a really strict Vietnamese immigrant household, and my parents expected me to be a doctor or a lawyer or do something like that. And I wanted to be a fashion designer.
Okay.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
But I was dating a guy who wanted to be a stand-up comedian. Mm. And so I didn't even know anything about stand-up comedy. And I was going with him to a lot of local open mics in New Orleans.
Okay.
And the New Orleans Comedy Festival, which there's been a couple cycles of it, but there was a New Orleans Comedy Festival. And I would go with him to all of his shows. And that's how I got introduced to stand-up comedy.
Now, New Orleans is kind of a tough town for comedy. As much as it's a town famous for music and food, it's not so much for comedy. Don't you agree?
I mean, I think New Orleans has a really, really great comedy community, but comedy clubs always fail here. And one of the reasons is because people come here to listen to music.
Right. You don't have the fan base. Not that you don't have good comics.
I mean, Ellen came from here. Mark Norman came from here.
Oh, I know. You have
Sean Patton. There's all sorts of comedians that come from
But they've
New
never
Orleans.
Come back.
I'm just saying, it's not a place that has a club scene that's supported by the community.
No, because she's right. It's more people come here to hear music.
Right.
And to piss in the streets and puke in the gutters and stuff like that. They don't come here to hear jokes.
But there's been an ongoing effort to develop rooms and to develop the scene. And I know I was looking at your schedule during the past month, and you had 8 or 9 spots, different places.
There's a really, really good local comedy scene here, and there's a festival, and Skankfest has been coming here the last few years.
Yeah, Skankfest. Did you go to Skankfest?
I didn't, but there's a lot of, I think, draw to New Orleans, but it's just really, really hard to maintain a comedy club here. There's been many, many comedy clubs here since I've been doing stand-up. There was a comedy club in Metairie in the old hotel called the Joke Gym. Mm, there was an improv at the Harrah's before it was Caesars. Mm. And there was a comedy club called Comedy House New Orleans
on Fulton.
Yeah. So there's been a lot of comedy clubs here and long-standing comedy rooms here for many, many years. There's a show called Comedy Gumbo at Howlin' Wolf. That's every Thursday. That's been going on for over 20 years.
That's been going on for a long time. And Howlin' Wolf will bring national comics in and run shows, you know, either in the big room, dropping curtains, making a smaller room out of it, or in the small room that they actually have there.
I think that there's a big need for comedy here and a big desire for it, but it's just, for some reason, a comedy club does not do well and has never done well in the history of New Orleans.
It hasn't clicked yet. You haven't found the right place yet.
I noticed that some clubs will have music six nights out of the week, and then they'll have a comedy night.
You know,
that's probably the way to do it. That's the only way it's going to survive.
I think is happening, yeah.
Now, this boyfriend of yours who is doing stand-up, is he still doing it, or did you break up with him?
He cheated on me.
With another comedian?
No, with a dominatrix.
Oh, really?
And I missed going to comedy nights with him. And so I decided, I remember he would always say, you know,
was he any good?
He was okay.
He was okay, but he doesn't do it anymore.
I don't think so.
So this is after you, at what age are you when this is happening?
19.
You were just going to college or?
Yeah. And so I just missed going to comedy nights, and I started comedy around 18, 19. I don't remember the exact age, but I.
Were you keeping it a secret from your family?
I did. Yeah. I did keep it a secret because I didn't really know what to say. I mean, I felt like, you know, I was a straight A student. I was a really smart kid, and I think my parents wanted me to do something more traditional, for sure.
Now, did your other siblings become attorneys and doctors? And
no.
Oh, okay.
No, that's cool.
So you had some cover. It wasn't just you.
No one in my family has followed the traditional path. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, your parents, are they doctors and attorneys?
No, my mom had a very stereotypical job. She had a nail salon on the West Bank.
Okay.
Yeah. And then a Vietnamese nail salon. And then my dad actually worked at Toro. He was the head of biomedical engineering for many years there.
Okay, well, there. So there you go.
But he also owned for many, many years one of the two. You guys probably don't know about this only because you're not Vietnamese. Mm-hmm. Vietnamese newspapers in the city.
Huh. No, I didn't know that there were any.
Yes.
Why would I? But
there's two Vietnamese newspapers, and he owned one of them. It's still running. I just actually went to a Vietnamese restaurant on the West Bank, and I saw the newspaper. Someone else took over it on one of the counters. It was called the Little Saigon News of New Orleans.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
All right. Before we go on with your career, what's the best Vietnamese restaurant in this town? Tell me.
Oh, good question.
I don't like that question, Manny.
Okay,
really?
She's going to make enemies. Yeah.
Well, here's the reason.
Tell me after this show.
Here's the reason why. It's kind of like saying, what's your favorite food? If someone who has, and maybe I'm insulting you guys on accident, but someone who has a favorite food doesn't really love food.
Okay.
Right? Because if you love food, you love food.
Sure.
And there's no
favorite. I like peanut butter.
And Bosco. No, I get you. I get you. But there are many great
Vietnamese restaurants for sure. Yeah.
You know,
what are the best ones to dine and ditch?
You know, I was recently this festival out in New Orleans East that's run out of this church, a Vietnamese church out there. And I remembered as a kid when that church was dedicated, my band played it, and the archbishop at the time showed up
for
the dedication of this church. And it was this guy, Schulte, who was from Pennsylvania, and he sat in and sang the Beer Barrel Polka with the band.
Oh, my God.
and I just had this as I'm pulling into the park, and I'm like, oh, I would remember this thing that happened. Anyway, so you get the taste for it. Now, do you in your boyfriend's absence, you start going to some open mic nights and trying your hand at it?
Yeah.
Now, how was that? Just writing? I mean, what was the process for you? Getting your feet wet?
Yeah. So I kind of already, I think, was doing comedy writing unconsciously by going with him to his shows, because I would sit in the back and.
Say, he should have said this. He should have said that.
Yeah. I would tell him that. I would tell him that all the time. I would say, you know, babe, you should say it like this. It's funnier. And every time he would do it, he would get a laugh. So I was kind of writing.
So he liked being dominated.
Yeah, I get it.
He would get a little annoyed. He would say, well, this is actually, he planted the seed. He'd say, well, if you think you're so funny, why don't you write 5 minutes of material?
And I would think, well, I was so shy.
I was like, oh, I'm not going to write 5 minutes of stand-up. But then when he said that, the wheels started turning. And I was like, well, what would I talk about? And so I started thinking about material.
Okay.
And that was the start of it.
So then
just
I know. So then you're in college at the time. Now, where'd you go to college?
I went to Cal State LA in Los Angeles.
Okay.
East LA.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I grew up in West LA. I've been to Cal State LA. It's a nice campus. Last time I was there was maybe the 80s. I don't remember. I'm sure it's changed.
So were you doing comedy out there when you were in college?
I was doing comedy very aggressively and pretty much.
So why do you go there to school? Is there just a major there that they offered that they couldn't get here? Or you just wanted to get out of town?
I wanted to get out of town. Basically moved with my boyfriend. He wanted to.
Oh, you were still seeing him at the time?
At the time, yeah.
Okay.
He had an uncle who was a famous screenwriter. Ah. And so he thought maybe he could help him with his career. So we moved to Los Angeles.
Okay. And so you're going to school out there and you're still doing spots, going out?
Yeah, doing stand-up.
Where are you going? You're going to the Sunset Strip, Melrose?
Yeah, Comedy Store.
Yeah.
Laugh Factory.
Yeah, Laugh Factory. Go to open mic nights and stuff?
Yeah.
Now, I've only tried stand-up alone by myself maybe a dozen times in my career. And I must be honest, it is, and you can ask any fucking actor, any fucking person who's been on stage in a play, doing stand-up is the hardest thing to do ever.
Will Ferrell says it's the hard. He can't do it. Will Ferrell tried to do stand up.
No. Look at Michael Richards tried to do it.
It didn't work out well.
Yeah, it didn't work out well for him either. You know, it has to be the hardest thing to do. I mean, you could be a fucking Shakespearean thespian trained actor, but Olivier, come do three minutes of fucking stand-up.
Nowhere to hide, man. You're completely exposed.
Yeah. And when you bomb, you bomb.
And also, audiences are more judgmental of stand-up. They're like, make me laugh, you know?
If you pay $20 a year, fucking make me laugh, motherfucker.
Whereas if you're a dramatic actor or something else, I think there's a little more leeway. Yeah.
They're more open to it. It's more of an adversarial relationship in comedy.
I've even done shows where people are trying not to laugh. They have their arms crossed and they're like, yeah, make me laugh, bitch.
Right, yeah.
So when you get out there to the Comedy Store and Laugh Factory, are people welcoming to you? What's your experience when you get out there? Who is out there? Who's up and coming? Anybody we would know at the time? Who are you rubbing elbows
with?
any horrible stories you want to repeat? You don't have to. But
Bobcat Goldthwait.
The comedy scene was pretty brutal when I started in the early 2000s. It was pretty much a boys' club.
And that was like before the current comedy boom. It was really a low ebb. Huh?
Yeah, it was pretty brutal. It was very, very misogynistic. It was pretty bad.
It's even tougher for women. Yeah, it's very tough for the women to get their feet in and stuff like that.
I'll tell you guys a story. I won't name names, but okay. I submitted a comedy tour idea to the head of a very big chain and he liked me. He was the manager of a very big comedy chain and he really, really liked me and I had performed at the club and I was a regular and I had submitted an idea for a funny women comedy tour. And he basically said to me, Rosie, nobody wants to see funny women. Sorry. So I would get things like that, you know.
You wanted to see domineering women, right?
Yeah.
I actually got offered a show on XM Radio very early in my career, and I got a voicemail. I mean, this is how brazen it was. I probably could have sued, but whatever. I got a voicemail from the head of like XM or Sirius, I can't remember which one, saying we have to cancel your show because we just had a gay guy and he sued us, so we don't want a woman to sue. And he just canceled me. So.
Jeez. Yeah, I think you probably did have.
I probably did have a really great lawsuit.
Don't you think?
And he left it on voicemail. I was like, oh, great.
Right? Don't you think though? when the late 90s came and the internet and these devices and all this, it opened up more doors for women, right?
It did, but I think they're still, I think the internet's amazing. Instagram is amazing. All of these platforms are amazing.
I think it's great, but I also think it's horrible because I think it gives too many people a voice.
Yes.
And there's so many people who shouldn't be talking.
That's a trade-off. Yes, exactly. Yeah, but it does help the little guy. But I do think that there's still an insane number of gatekeepers.
Right.
And I think that with the consolidation of media, there's still a lot of people that maybe you think they got famous or viral online, but they're backed by a huge network of corporate conglomerates.
Yeah.
So I think it's kind of a little tricky.
So it just kind of gives you the illusion that this is a grassroots.
Exactly.
Thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
Now, who do you like growing up when you're thinking, you're not even a comedian yet, but who do you like, men or women, doing stand up? Who do you like? Wow, that guy's great, or this chick's great.
Oh, I really. So my idol was Joan Rivers.
Oh yeah, of course.
I got to meet her before she passed away, and my friend was opening for her in Santa Barbara. I went to go see her and talk to her backstage, and she actually completely changed my stand-up comedy. I'd seen her, specials and other things like that, but there was nothing like seeing her live, and she made me realize how lazy I was as a comic.
How much she wrote?
Well, not just the writing. So before her, I was just doing straight stand-up. When I watched her, she would do a setup and a punchline, then she would do a tag, then she would do an act out, then she would do another tag to the act out. She would milk every joke as far as it could be milked.
Yeah,
right.
And I was like, oh, I'm not doing that. Mm. And I'm still not doing that because I'm not a genius like her, but I realized I was being too lazy by just doing a setup punchline. Another thing I was really embarrassed of was grew up very smart, and the comics that I really liked were very edgy and intellectual.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of looked down on comics that were very physical on stage at the time. Mm-hmm. I don't anymore.
Right.
And I was like, oh, well, they're just kind of doing physical comedy and just moving around and being very animated. And that's kind of like beneath me, right? Because I wanted to
like
be this
cheating or something.
Yeah. I wanted to be this like intellectual comic and be witty and sarcastic. And then I saw Joan, and she was not afraid to do an act out. She was not afraid to like make fun of her ex-husband in a wheelchair and then push a fake wheelchair on stage.
Right. Making faces and
making
stuff.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, okay. I guess that was a really smart joke, and she did an act out. And so she kind of changed my point of view on that. And I'm a little more physical on stage now. I don't do full act outs. That's not really my thing, but I'm more animated, I think.
I saw her the last time she played New Orleans, right before she passed. She did a gig at the Healing Center. And I talked about this recently on the show. She would do some stuff. She goes, I'm going to get to the act in a minute. And she would tell more jokes. She goes, I'm going to get to the act in a minute. It's like that was part of the shtick she had. She was great.
And she was like a senior citizen. And she had like 5-inch high heels on and like a feather boa and did an hour of stand up and like wasn't sweating. I'm like, are you human? Like,
well, we had Sergeant T. Ben Boudreaux from WTIX. He's a joke writer. He wrote jokes for Joan.
Yeah.
And he also wrote jokes for The Tonight Show, Jay Leno and stuff. He was on the show, and he told us, which I couldn't believe, he says he writes to this day 40 to 50 jokes a day. It's like, how the fuck do you do that?
That's insane.
How do you write 40 to 50 jokes a day? I can get maybe 2 or 3 a week, And he told us, he said, well, not all of them are good.
Yeah, that's true.
You should listen to it. He's pretty good.
Well, he was saying a lot of them that he was writing for the radio, he would reformulate. He has standard formulas that he can plug recent current events into. So they were.
Well, you would be surprised how many things in current events just repeat.
Yeah,
like
sure.
10 years later. And then so you just replace, said child molester with other child molester.
Right, exactly.
The joke still holds up. Right,
or a certain corrupt politician with other corrupt politician.
Right.
Yeah, everything repeats itself.
Well, so you complete your degree out there. Now, I think you have a graduate degree somewhere, huh?
I have my master's from Cal State LA, yeah.
Oh, you just went straight through?
It wasn't because I wanted to get it. It was just my parents kept not necessarily bribing me because I was working as a waitress and other things, but they kept encouraging me to continue my education and hope that I would give up this silly stand-up thing.
Okay. Right,
so I don't want to say it wasn't my choice because obviously I have a choice in everything, but I think they really thought it was a phase.
Right. Yeah. So it was a compromise on your part to...
They kept encouraging me and kind of like, I was you know, struggling and I was working like waitressing jobs and stuff. So they would send me money and encourage me.
Sure.
Right. Oh, yeah. The money talks.
They're like, maybe you'll give up stand up and get a real job. And they kind of wanted it as a backup because they didn't really... I don't want to say they didn't really believe in me. I think, you know, you're coming from a war-torn country with like $2 in your pocket and you're like, you want to... tell jokes for a living? Like, what are you talking about?
Right. No, we sweated and worked so hard so that you don't have to be in this position.
They're like, what are you doing?
Right.
So I think they wanted me to have a backup. So, I mean, I'm, you know, proud to have my master's degree, but it wasn't
In what? Master's in what?
In communications.
Oh, okay. Communications. Yeah. Okay.
But it wasn't my preference. I was kind of egged along.
Right. You eventually break up with the boyfriend?
He cheated on me. Okay. And I...
Are you seeing anyone now? Oh, you're married now. You're married now.
I married for 15 years, so...
Oh, okay. Children?
No kids. Yeah.
Good. Yeah, kids are a waste. Yeah, I just had dinner with my daughter last night. I just looked at her, and, you know, I looked at her and I said, okay, whatever. She's a good kid.
You've been doing comedy for 15 years or something like that at this point? Or
24 years.
24 years. Oh, yeah. Okay. You look very young.
Thank you. It's a dark bar lighting.
Sure, yeah. Well, yeah, this is my preferred lighting, too. This is when I look my best as well. Do you still have sitcoms going on? Are you going out for pilot season?
I was auditioning. I was touring a little bit. I toured with the USO.
How was that?
Performing for the troops. I toured, you know, internationally and things like that. It was amazing and crazy. I know you guys aren't like really a political podcast, but just know our dollars are being spent overseas.
Yeah, well, sure. You know, yeah, we have a huge global presence.
I was just...
American hegemony is real.
I was
real.
Just shocked at it. Like, I went to Germany to perform for the U.S. military, and I think we visited 28 bases. I didn't realize there were 28 bases, U.S. bases in Germany.
Oh, yeah.
So there's like whole bases that are like entire cities in Germany.
Yeah.
So that was like a wake-up call for me. I was really shocked. And I went to Iraq and Kuwait. And we were supposed
to... the reception was good with the soldiers and all that?
Yeah, I had a really positive reception. I was surprised. I was a little nervous because it was a lot of, you know, young men.
Sure.
Right, yeah. They want Anne Margaret, right?
It was fun. So I was a little nervous. It was very strange. There was a lot of things about military culture that were strange to me that I learned about.
Okay.
We had to like check in before and after our shows and we'd get debriefed and things like that. So it was very militaristic.
Oh, I bet. Yeah.
Well, yeah,
security.
The military.
It's all security.
It's supposed to be. Yeah, yeah.
Let's hope so.
Debriefing is some of the best part of it, though.
Yeah. And then again, some of our military leaders are flying by the, you know, they're getting shot down by the appointees. Anyway, so that's a good reception. And if I remember correctly, you've written on some series, comedy shows or comedy series. Have you done any writing, like sitcom stuff?
I haven't done any writing.
Oh, okay. Then I read it wrong. I don't know.
Who does cramming everything in.
And, with one eye open.
Sure,
you know,
sure.
And one leg in the toilet. Right. You know, so
five drinks in. Well, you know, I was actually thinking this seems like a good place to take a little break.
Okay,
man.
Rosie, well, this is a time where the troubled nation knows what to do, and we'll be right back.
I'm
we're back. Back with Mr. Manny Chevrolet. I am Renee Coleman, back with our guest, Miss Rosie Tran. Now, Rosie, I know you're new to the podcast, but all our listeners understand this is a listener-supported operation. We have Venmo and PayPal links in the show notes of every show and the Facebook page. And actually have some good news. Lawrence Gilbert supported the show. He utilized that Venmo link.
Lawrence
there.
Gilbert?
Lawrence Gilbert. Larry Gilbert. I'm not sure.
He's not the Hollywood guy, Larry Gilbert.
I don't know.
Gilbert. Remember that guy? I think he produced Cheers.
Yeah, I don't think it's Gilbert. I think it's something else.
Okay.
No, that's a different guy. But thank you, Lawrence. Everybody can be like Lawrence and jump on those links, the PayPal and Venmo links. Also, we have the Patreon link there. It takes the guesswork out of supporting the show. And we have the Troublemen Podcast t-shirts are there for all the popular sizes and colors and styles. And let's see, follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening to it. Give us 5 stars. Costs you nothing. Helps us a lot.
Yeah.
And I would say, yes, I do have dates coming up. The day that this show comes out, I'll be playing at the Jazz Fest with the Iguanas during the daytime, and then Loose Cattle at the Music Box that night. And then Saturday, May 2nd, I'm playing the festival with John Mooney, and then later with Susan Cowsill at the festival, and then playing with the Iguanas and the Klezmer All-Stars at Vaughn's that night. And then finally on Sunday, May 3rd, I'm playing with the Iguanas at the Carousel, and then playing Papa Molly's David Lindley tribute at 10:30 at Chickiwawa. And it's going to have Bernie Larson and Wally Ingram.
Are you playing the Bob Dylan birthday concert?
I'm not. I think I'm going to be.
I thought for sure you'd be playing that because you love him so much.
I do love Bob Dylan, but you know, everybody does their own thing. So, you know, sometimes people.
You weren't invited?
I think I'm on the road then, but I was not invited anyhow.
Okay.
It's some other bass players involved in that. Anyway, so there's that. That's enough of that. Back to our guest, the great Ms. Rosie Tran. Now, So Rosie, welcome back.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
I want to ask you a question, Rosie, real quick before
Manny.
I forget it.
Yeah.
My question is, why are you here? You're a big star. You don't need to be with us. We're just he's a big Jew. I'm a little spick. You know, where are you going to go with us? Where are you going to go with us? We're not going to go anywhere.
I love being on the Troubled Men podcast. Okay. I'm so happy to be here.
All right. Okay.
Now, were you familiar with the Troubled Men podcast before today?
I wasn't.
Okay.
Okay.
Now it's still a bit of a mystery as to how we connected, how this what the exact conduit was that your representation got in touch with us. But we're
well,
thankful.
Well, I'm here. Here I am.
That's right. It's as I said, pennies from heaven.
So right.
Why ask why? Just be happy with the gifts that God gives you.
I'm here. We're laughing. We're having a great time. That's
we're
all that matters.
We're having a great time. Manny and I are having cocktails. You're having a soft drink. Yeah, I know. And you're actually doing a show tonight. Right after this?
I am, but this will be released in a week, so
I know, but
matter?
You can still talk about it. So you're playing tonight at the Britannia Bar?
Yes, at the Britannia Bar.
And they do
Toronto.
Comedy a lot there?
They do comedy once a week every Wednesday.
All right,
Wednesday
well, that's good. The listeners should know that the Britannia Bar does.
And you'll probably be there.
It's on Britannia?
It's on Britannia.
Okay.
Yeah.
Whereabouts?
It's by Touro Hospital.
Okay, I know exactly.
Yeah, near Louisiana Avenue.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Every Wednesday at 9 o'clock, there's a comedy show there and has been for a couple of years now.
Patients from Touro are dying to get in, I bet, right?
They're dying to do it. You know, Manny and I, the Troubled Men podcast physician is right there, right in that locale.
Okay.
Yeah, and anytime we've been admitted, it's been to Touro.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
Yeah. Solid.
Primarily, so I'm here. So to answer your question, I'm here to have a blast with Manny and Renee.
Okay.
Okay.
But you're here in New Orleans visiting family and also doing some dates.
Yeah. I mean, I spend about 30% of my time in New Orleans. So I come here a lot. My mom's still here. My sister lives here. I'm very connected to the city. So I'm here performing as much as I can when I can make it a win-win and perform and visit my mom.
Right on. You still have a lot of friends from Ben Franklin here? Or
I do. Most friends. Of my friends are from the comedy community now, though. A lot of my friends from Ben Franklin have moved away and obviously started their own lives elsewhere, Chicago, New York, wherever people drift off to.
Kind of stiffs, yeah.
So a lot of my friends here are from the comedy community, which is a, like I said, there's no club, but there's a vibrant community for sure.
Do you know Mike Strecker?
I do know Mike Strecker from Tulane.
He was here. He's been on the show.
Mike Strecker is one of my oldest colleagues in comedy.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Really?
I love Mike Strecker.
He's a good guy.
He does those children joke books and stuff like that.
Yeah, he's really, really funny.
Yeah.
Have you seen a stand-up?
No, I haven't.
He's a good guy.
Yeah.
And Jackie Palms, you must know
her.
Yes,
I know Jackie Palms as well. Yeah. Yes.
She was on the show.
She's an improv and in an improv troupe as well.
Oh, okay.
A stand-up, yeah.
Are you involved in improv?
Not anymore, but I've done improv.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, do you went through some comedy training at some point, or
I did. I studied with a comedian named Adam Barnhart, who had a class at the Comedy Store, and he helped me out a lot. And I also guest teach at a few comedy teachers' classes and stuff like that. Mm. So
right on.
Now, is the improv still in L.A. or is that gone?
No, nope. There's an improv on Melrose.
On Melrose,
yeah,
still?
In West Hollywood.
It's still there. I used to go there a lot. This is way back in the '80s, so, you know, way long time ago. And
it's the same location.
Same location.
Yeah.
And because I hear Melrose is so freaking expensive now that it's so hard to like have a business there.
Yeah, I mean, things are changing in Los Angeles for sure.
Oh, it's, yeah, definitely.
It's definitely. I mean, the whole. No, US
I couldn't
is
move,
changing.
I couldn't move there back to LA unless I hit a number. You know, that's the only way I can move back to LA.
What's expensive, the number? Huh?
It's very expensive.
No, like the lottery.
Oh, okay.
That kind of number. The Powerball. Did you hear that the Powerball is going to go international?
Huh.
Did you hear this?
No, but
yeah, just yesterday I heard that the Powerball.
To me.
The Powerball is going to go international, which means they'll have like jackpots worth like, you know,
$1 trillion.
Yeah, $1 trillion.
I don't think that's a good idea.
I don't know.
It could destabilize the global economic.
No, so usually like lottery winners like don't do well after winning the lottery.
It's true.
That's
it's
like
kind
a thing.
Of a curse. Yeah.
People get it's just so much money. And
I would love that curse, baby.
Sure,
that curse.
You'd last about 9 months.
It'd be a fucking great 9 months, man.
I think it makes people like go a little crazy.
Well, yeah, you know, people that get too much money, they're able to institute all of their bad ideas, all their worst ideas, worst impulses.
I think it's good if you win the lottery, but like a smaller lottery, like $2 or $3 million. When you win like the $1 billion or the $500 million, that's where you go cuckoo caca.
Oh, I thought you were going to say like a scratcher, like a $20.
I've won a couple of those, actually.
Yeah.
Manny loves the scratchers, man.
I do the scratchers. Not that so much anymore. I give them away.
It's a fun party favor, huh?
I buy them as presents.
My mom does that.
Really?
Say your birthday was tomorrow. Yeah. I'd get you like a $50 worth of scratchers.
What? $50 worth of scratchers?
Yeah.
You're bound to win with $50 of scratchers.
Like the
something.
$2 ones.
You
win $2.
A new ticket, sure. You know, some more tickets. You know. Right. Then it gets you hooked.
Yeah.
So basically, I'm a pimp.
You're trying to get people addicted to gambling on scratchers.
I'm the pusher man. Yeah, exactly. You know, but yeah, they're thinking about doing that. And whatever, man. I don't care. You know?
Sure. Yeah. You know, manipulating the population. So you have new representation. You have somehow that they got to us. The people are effectively representing you. You have tell us about Rosie Tran Presents.
Oh, yeah. So that's my new show on Amazon Prime. You guys can check it out. It's 10 episodes, and it's me interviewing different stand-up comedians, and then they do their stand-up.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you do this from L.A.?
Yeah. Yeah. We shot 10 episodes, and it's two comics an episode, and it's really fun.
Now, who are some of these new comics? They're up-and-comers, I'm sure. They're just not already.
So I don't know if I would call them up-and-comers. A lot of them are comics that
you've already established.
I think are established, but don't have a big, like, remember how I said that even though there's this facade of people kind of coming up from the internet or Instagram, that there's these large corporate institutions kind of backing them?
Right.
These are comics that are a lot of them are my friends. A lot of them are people that I started with, came up with, have been doing stand-up forever, are hilarious, but don't, like, never got a chance, basically. Yeah.
Right.
So I wanted to feature people that
do
I
you
thought
think
were really funny.
Platforms like YouTube and stuff, because I know there's a lot of comedians who've never played in front of a live audience, but yet they're popular because of platforms like YouTube and
comics like that. Yeah.
And how do you feel about that?
I feel very mixed. You know, I went to the Irvine Improv, okay, and I was talking to the manager, and there was what we call a YouTube comedian, right? So there was or a TikTok comedian.
Right.
That was headlining. And I said, you know, I was talking to the manager. I said, I've never heard of this guy.
Yeah.
Who is he? Is he even funny? And the manager said, he's not funny. He's horrible. And he said, but he has 2 million followers on TikTok or whatever, and he can sell out the venue. And that's all we care about.
Crazy. Huh.
So I think that there's a little bit of, I would say that there's a little bit of friction. Like, there's a lot of comics that I know that have been doing it for 20 years, pounding the pavement.
Well, yeah, these YouTube guys aren't paying their dues.
In a way, yes, sometimes.
Yeah, you got to pay your dues in many ways to get to the top before we knock you down. Right?
I wouldn't say that, but I would say that maybe they're not as seasoned as they should be to have that level of following.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Yeah, and I think
that... Of course not.
And I think that being funny for 2 seconds in a TikTok video is a different skill than doing stand-up for an hour.
Now, when those people get in front of a room of people for an hour, even if they sell out the room in 5 minutes, that's a long time for somebody that does TikTok videos to stand up. And do they fare well? I can't imagine that.
So
they do.
So it's mixed, because I know a few comedians who I would call them TikTok comedians that I performed with, and I think if you do it right, it's okay. So I know a few comedians that are TikTok comedians that have leveraged their way into having a decent stand-up career, and then I know people that are TikTok comedians that haven't put in the work, so to speak, and it's really hard for them.
Well, I mean, when you stand in front of an audience, they're animals. They're going to eat you alive. If you don't have those skills.
But if it's their TikTok fans there, then they're going to love them.
That is, Manny yeah. has
to. They
yeah.
can just stand up there and they don't
exactly.
go.
If that TikTok guy would go to 1 a.m. at the Comedy Store, He can't do it. Yeah, he can't do it.
So that's what Manny is kind of expressing, which is why I say it's 50-50.
Okay.
Because if they're bringing their own audience, these people are already hyped up to see them. They kind of... So it's a softer audience.
They're not even necessarily comedy fans. They're fans of this person.
Yes, exactly. Right, and right, so right, sometimes right. those people can have a really great stand-up career, and I'm using stand-up with quotations.
Yeah.
But it just depends on how they leverage it. They might not be... So if I was a TikTok comedian, for example, they wouldn't necessarily be stand-up comedy fans. They would be Rosie Tran fans.
Right.
And so that makes...
Their personality.
Exactly. Yeah. So that makes their, what would be a hard landing, more of a soft landing.
So to me, they're not really stand-ups then. They're just a certain platform.
I would say they're entertainers.
Entertainers. Sure.
Yeah.
That's a nice way.
Yeah. They're performers.
They're entertaining
people.
Yeah. No,
they're
absolutely.
Selling tickets.
God bless you. Look, anybody that can make a career in show business, more power to you. It's tough.
But in the comedy world, there's definitely a mix of respect depending on how you leverage it. And what I mean is that I do know comedians that started as TikTok comedians, but then they went and paid their dues and pounded the pavement, and they're actually really funny. And I think those types of comedians get a lot more respect than just like someone making goofy videos that doesn't respect stand-up comedy.
Sure. And I would imagine the person making the goofy videos, while they may have fans for a short amount of time, those people will age out of...
You would be surprised, but
okay,
yes.
Okay, all right. I don't know. I'm old. But you know, the people that can square that circle. Then
there's,
you know,
YouTubers that are making millions of dollars.
Oh, of course.
You know,
I'm
making
just saying,
all sorts of.
You know, if you never really develop the chops to do it for real, then you know it would seem it would have a limited lifespan.
And they don't need to tour really, these YouTubers, right?
They don't. But I think a lot of them. So I don't know if you guys.
I mean, because if a YouTuber is doing well on YouTube and then he plays Hollywood, and he's got lots of followers in Hollywood, but then he has to play, like, you know,
Poughkeepsie?
Well, Poughkeepsie are, you know, Flutter's Club in Phoenix are, you know, places like, you know,
Yuck Yucks.
Yeah, exactly. Yuck Yucks in Des Moines. They're not going to do well there, you think? Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, I don't know if you guys have ever heard this quote, but there's kind of like a quote that says, every comedian secretly wants to be a musician.
And every musician secretly wants to
be a comedian, right?
Of course.
So everyone's always kind of searching. And I think for YouTubers and TikTokers, I think a lot of them secretly do want to be stand-up comedians. That's why they started making funny videos. So to your point, Manny, I think a lot of them, they want to prove themselves in a way, even if they're
well,
not.
Let's hope so.
Even if they're not that funny in real life.
You ever hear this expression? Every dope addict wants to be a stripper, and every stripper is a dope addict.
Never heard that
one. You ever heard that one?
Have you, Renee?
I heard it just now. Yeah. It's always the first time for everything. Yeah. Man, he's a font of genius over there.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of performing, so part of your new representation is with the Global Talent Entertainment is some touring component, right?
Like yeah.
Tell us about that, the Wicked Women of Comedy and International Comedy.
Some of the episodes of my Amazon show, and I'm just going on tour with them. So hopefully we'll get some dates soon, and I just signed with them. So we'll see what happens.
Okay.
I do have a funny story. When you said my intro, though, I do have a funny story about my comedy special, if you guys care.
Oh, yeah, please.
So my comedy special is called The Hanoi Honey.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called that because when I started comedy in Los Angeles, everyone would, you know, a lot of comics, that was my nickname for me, The Hanoi Honey. And it was a silly nickname. And that's what I wanted my comedy special to be named. Well, if you guys look up The Hanoi Honey on Peacock, it's now The Saigon Honey because apparently NBC thought that was, like, too communist.
Oh, really? NBC of all networks, really?
So they changed it. I didn't realize that. And because a few people were like, I can't find your comedy special. And I was like, that's weird. So I looked it up. So they renamed it The Saigon.
Well, they don't even call Hanoi anymore, right? It's Ho Chi Minh City, right?
So Saigon is now called Ho Chi Minh City.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
So does that affect the material at all in your act?
It doesn't, but it's just more pro-American and less... socialist / communist, but I wasn't. That's not the reason it was called that. It was just called that because that was my nickname when I started the comedy scene. But apparently, it was too socialist.
Yeah, and it has the alliteration, you know. Yeah, it works. No,
apparently, it was too socialist for NBC, so they changed it to Saigon Honey.
Now, do you have family still in Vietnam now?
I do, but it's a lot of like distant cousins and stuff like that. Most of my family's here. My brother lives in Paris, and the rest of my family's here. My sister's in New York. So
okay.
Yeah.
Now, I don't want to get back into politics, but I would be curious about, like, your family. What are their feelings on the warm embrace of collectivism? Are they looking forward to America becoming more Marxist?
I don't know how to answer that question.
Okay, never mind. Moving on.
Well, you did say, I did catch a part of this morning when I was having coffee. I did see one of your videos, and you had this joke where you were saying that that you love everybody, but it had something to do with Koreans. You didn't care for Koreans.
Oh, yeah. I saw you hard on the Koreans.
Yeah, you went hard on the Koreans. And I could relate to that because I used to have this joke where I said, I love everybody except Dominicans. So I could relate totally. But can you expand on that a little bit, the Korean joke?
So I love Korean people. I don't hate Korean people. That was just me being silly. But there is a little jab in there. My ex that cheated on me, he did cheat on me with a Korean dominatrix.
Okay. All right. Well, that's all I need to know. I don't like the Dominicans because they think they're better than the Haitians that they share the same island with. So that's my whole deal. Right. You know,
little jab, but I have a lot of Korean friends.
Oh, okay, good. I love Korea. I love it, man. So yeah, I just wanted to get the answer to that joke. And I got it. Thank you very much. I did get that. That was good. I liked that a lot. It's like drinking a soda pop.
I know, it really
it's
is.
It's like, what the fuck is this?
Soda pop with booze on it.
I don't even taste the booze, man.
Yeah.
I'm going to feel it probably later, but anyway.
Yeah, sneaking up on you.
So what's next for you, kid? When are you going to do a movie? You going to do some acting? All comedians want to act.
So I actually have a movie if anyone wants to buy my movie.
Oh, you have your own movie.
Yes. It's completed if anyone wants to buy a movie. It's a horror comedy starring Jake Busey and Bai Ling.
Jake Busey?
Yes.
Oh, the Jake Busey.
Yes.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, I'll check it out. And you're looking for people to back it right now or to distribute it?
No, it's completed. I'm looking for a distributor. It's a completed comedy horror. I have a cameo in it, and I wrote it. And
who directed this?
Rebecca Cochin, who is a Scream Queen horror comedy actress and comedian.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. All right, well, look for that.
I co-wrote it with her, and she directed it. And
is it filmed down here?
We filmed it in Los Angeles.
Okay.
And it's ready, and we're shopping it around. So if anyone wants to buy a movie or distribute it.
Okay.
Right on.
No, all you need is a poster. Just get a poster made, and someone will buy it. Just ask Francis Ford Coppola.
Yeah, no, that works. That's how Doris Wishman used to do it. Yeah, she'd think of the title that would make a good poster.
Yeah.
And then she would write the movie based on that. No, really.
But Coppola sold the movie just based on the
poster.
Based
on the poster.
Yeah. He got buyers, but he's Coppola.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. I'm not Coppola, so.
Yeah.
Now, can we talk about your OnlyFans page?
Sure, yeah.
Oh, that's dangerous, isn't it?
I think this is the first guest that we've had on that has an OnlyFans page that I know of.
Okay.
Yes, I have an OnlyFans, and I'm proud of it.
All right, yeah, no shame there. So you're a lovely girl. You engage in people. You have a lot of subscribers to that.
Yeah, I have a lot of subscribers. I wanted to do it for many, many years, and my husband was very against it.
Sure.
Not because...
I get that.
Not because of me posting the content, but I'm very sensitive, and he was worried about me getting stalkers and other creepy people, because as a comedian, I've had stalkers before.
Yeah.
So he was just more worried about me having to deal with toxic people.
Sure.
But
he lets you come on the show. So. Yeah. I don't know.
But he just dropped you off.
But
he's not even
here.
He's
like, bye.
Yeah, he's like, see ya. Been nice knowing you. Yeah.
But I was posting. So my OnlyFans is what we would call PG-17R, not X.
Right,
so I don't do anything pornographic.
Well, good.
It was just like sexy photos. And I was posting those on Instagram for free.
Oh, okay.
So I was like, well, why can't I just post it on OnlyFans and just make money from it? And he was like, okay. And then one of my girlfriends, I don't want to out her, so I'm not going to say who it is, but she's a comedian. And during COVID, she was making $10,000 a month on OnlyFans.
Wow.
And I was like, well, someone's...
Without even telling a joke?
No, just posting her sexy content or whatever. So her sexy, silly content. So I told my hubby, I was like, well, so-and-so's making like $10,000 a month on OnlyFans. And he's like, okay, you can try it. So I started doing it, and I'm not making an insane amount of money, but I'm making enough money that he's now super supportive of my OnlyFans.
Okay, all right.
Okay.
Very good.
He's like, you need pictures, babe? What do you need?
Okay.
So he's now my editor, my part-time photographer.
Your art director.
He's my art director.
Yeah, he's everything.
Once he started seeing some money come in, he was like, okay. All right, I tried
OnlyFans, but I only got one fan. Only one.
Yeah. And it was me. It's crazy.
Yeah, and he didn't even give me any a buck or two, nothing.
Renee, horrible.
Yeah.
I sent him some buttons, as I recall.
So, yes, I do have an OnlyFans, and I encourage everyone to subscribe, follow, give me money.
Right on. We'll put all of your links up there in the show notes of this show. And you have a rosietran.com website that they can find all of these links to.
Yeah. And actually, I just wanted to say, too, if you like photography or artistic photography, all of my OnlyFans photos are professionally shot. Most of them professionally shot. I just shot with a New Orleans photographer, Daniel Gray.
Okay.
And I like to do... I feel guilty just putting my photos out there. So I feel like they have to be high quality. So actually most of the photography is like very high quality boudoir, like just, it's like artistic.
Right.
Yeah. So it's not just like,
so
whatever.
Rosie Tran, do you ever get anyone, with the LGBTQ high five community thinking that you're trans with that last name?
So I will tell you guys a story. So
okay.
There is a comedian in Los Angeles named Robin Tran.
Okay.
Who is also Vietnamese and happens to also be a trans comedian. So
okay.
Robin was born a male, and he identifies as a female.
Sure.
And his name obviously is very similar to mine, Robin Tran, Rosie Tran. So I have had people come up to me before and been like, wow, you look really, really good.
You look so much like a woman.
And I'm like, no, I'm not a trans comedian. I'm not Robin Tran.
Right,
I'm Rosie
so
Tran.
I'm glad I asked that question. Yeah, I wanted to know. Yeah. Because
so, and Robin is lovely, but Robin is also a clearly trans comedian. So
gotcha.
Whenever someone comes up to me and they're shocked how feminine I look, I'm like, I'm not Robin Tran. The other one.
Excellent.
It all makes sense. Right on.
Excellent.
Well, man, thank you so much, Rosie. I know you got to run down and do your spot, but you have anything else? Anything else you want to get in before we wrap the show up?
No, but I didn't feel you guys were that troubled.
Well,
oh, really?
You know, this show makes us less troubled. This is a way that, you know, the fellowship that we get here. It's
give her one of those stickers.
The ceremonial presentation
of
the Trouble Men podcast stickers, one to stick and one to save.
Okay.
If you need
I guess we're losing it, Renee, because I think I'm still very troubled. I think I made her laugh too much is why she thinks I'm not troubled.
We try to keep it light.
Listen to some of the shows.
Okay, you're very troubled.
Yes, you'll see. You'll
Who's
see
more troubled, Manny or Renee?
It would be Manny.
It would be me.
Now, on certain nights, I'm quite troubled because of what's going on. So,
right.
But, you know, I only seem less troubled in comparison to Manny.
Okay.
So it makes me feel better just in general.
Manny's more troubled.
Yes.
I'll have to go back and listen to past episodes to see how troubled Manny
is. He's the original troubled man.
I'm the original.
Very troubled.
Yeah. Check it out. You know, if you hang out with me more than an hour or two, then you'll realize.
Okay. I'll run for the hills. Right.
You know what? Go talk to my wife for a while. She'll tell you.
No, well, you know, someone recently, this came up again. It's come up before where a longtime fan, a friend of Jeff Treffinger's, said, does it make me a bad person if I really like Manny Chevrolet? And I said, the answer was yes. Welcome to the club. All right. Yeah. Thank you so much, Rosie.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Again.
You know,
enjoy your
Everybody go check out her. See her at Zeitgeist on May the 3rd. Yeah.
And OnlyFans, follow her on OnlyFans.
Follow me on OnlyFans. Watch my Amazon show.
Amazon show. Renee will post all that crap.
I'll post all the links.
Yeah.
And Rosie, as always, on the Trouble Men podcast, we like to say, trouble never ends.
But the struggle, Rosie, continues.
Good night.